All right, everyone. Welcome back to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr., where we have the opportunity to hear from Mr. Wesley Tharp. He is with the Georgia Budget and Policy Institute, a nonpartisan organization. I like emphasizing that. A nonpartisan organization that really helps us understand the numbers, the stories behind the numbers, the impact of the numbers, if indeed something is already in play or may potentially be put into play. Wesley Tharp, good to have you with us again. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, Carl. Thank you so much for having me on.
My pleasure. Wesley, for the benefit of some of the people who have not heard us talk before, if you would, please tell them more about the Institute and about your role there.
Absolutely. So I'm the Director of Research at the Georgia Budget and Policy Institute. We're a nonpartisan group, independent, not connected to the state government in any way. We essentially generate research and recommendations on several of the critical issues facing Georgia in particular, but also oftentimes federal issues as well as local community issues, things like K-12 education, health care, various anti-poverty programs, as well as key issues related to taxes and the budget.
Outstanding. And so that's where we are today. We're going to be taking a look at two issues, one having to do with this proposed federal budget and the way it might impact, or almost certainly will impact us, but also the tax plan, the proposed tax plan, and how it can impact us. And so it's good that you're joining us so that we can have an expert who can help us understand that, first of all, there will be an impact, and then what that impact will be. Where do you want to start?
Well, let me start by just sort of giving a little bit of a wide-angle lens on what's going on the federal level. This is something that people have probably heard at least some degree about on the news or at their places of work or in their communities. Essentially, there's two critical things to know. One is last month, both houses of Congress approved a budget resolution that calls for really enormous cuts in several different services that regular working Georgians rely on every day. These are things like basic food assistance, Medicaid, which covers primarily children and vulnerable populations like people with disabilities or pregnant women, and other things like access to student loans for lower income or working class families. These are cuts in federal investments nationwide and really in Georgia that a lot of people would really feel in their daily lives, and if not themselves, then maybe a colleague or a member of their family or someone in the community would feel. The second piece that is perhaps even more important is that Congress is right now debating a huge tax cut or tax reform proposal that could really blow an enormous hole in the nation's budget in the future and lead to really record deficits and long-term debt that would create even more pressure down the road to cut those sorts of key federal programs and investments like food assistance, Medicaid, and others even further. And so the tax plan is something that the House has already passed a version of. Senators are sort of thinking about it right now over their Thanksgiving break. The Senate is sort of back home with their families this week. But next week, the U.S. Senate will be considering this really, really costly tax plan that doesn't do a lot of good for individual families, frankly, which is something that we can get a little bit more into. And then they're likely to be voting sometime next week on that plan.
Okay. So first thing is a lot of cuts where for, I'm assuming, middle class and the poor, we're going to be hurt the most. Including cuts to access to education, which is so ironic because we hear so many people from all across the political spectrum saying that education is what's necessary to help people improve the quality of life. Medicaid, the other things you mentioned, what is the rationale that the Republicans are giving for having made those decisions?
Sure, there's a couple of things worth noting. One is that a lot of times when there are cuts being made to these areas of the budget that are focused on families and focused on helping people make ends meet and climb the economic ladder, it's to free up funds to send to other areas of the budget. Oftentimes, this will be increased defense spending, and then there are other areas that are also viewed as priorities by perhaps one party over the other. The second piece is that by cutting the sort of the larger buckets of federal spending, it can create a larger pressure to shrink the size of the federal government and to drive down tax revenues over time. That is sometimes done out of a bit of an outdated mode of thinking, a bit of a misguided mode of thinking, that really bare-bones tax levels and bare-bones level of spending are somehow important for growing the economy and creating jobs, when really a lot of the best practiced evidence from other states, a lot of the most reliable research from recent years, points to the idea that if you really want an economy that's growing and thriving and adding jobs, you need to be investing in people, in ladders of opportunity, and in communities. And so those are things like investments in education, in people's ability to see a doctor, in people's ability to, send their children to school with a full belly so that they're able to learn and kind of get on the track to future success. And so these sorts of cuts that are being discussed are not just problematic for individual Georgians or individual Americans who might rely on those programs. They're really critical in a broader community and economic sense.
Okay, so where you want to take it, looking at this on the broader sense, a broader community sense, if you want to look at it in more detail as to how it will impact families, you guide us here so that we'll just get that understanding of why we need to be engaged in this, and we need to be looking at it honestly and not politically, but just
absolutely.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, I spoke a fair amount there about some of these potential service cuts, of budget cuts that Congress has really paved the way for. That's the first part of the equation. Let me talk a little bit more about the tax plan that is being debated right now, and so people may be sort of hearing about it in the news or reading about it on Twitter or what have you. The debate that Congress is having right now, and the House has already passed this plan, is to enact a large tax cut on the federal level that would cost up to $1.5 trillion over 10 years. That's trillion with a T. So that averages out to $150 billion a year in lost federal revenue potentially under this tax plan. To put that in context, $150 billion a year is about five times what Congress spends on the entire Pell Grant program that sends tens of thousands of Georgians to get a college degree every year, and then hundreds of thousands, if not millions, around the country to access higher education. It's also about 50 times what the country spends each year maintaining its national parks. And so we're not talking about pocket change when it comes to the size of these tax cuts that Congress is currently debating. And so that would be problematic for some of the reasons I was talking about earlier when it comes to cuts in the budgets and cuts in key services. So where do those tax cuts go? Where does that lost revenue go? With the way the tax plan is structured, the vast majority of the benefit is going to go to large corporations, their shareholders, wealthy investors, and very affluent families, whereas lower-income, working-class, and middle-class Georgians would likely only see a modest benefit at best. And in particular, or what is especially important to understand, is that many of the tax cuts in the plan for families are temporary in nature. And so regular working Georgians might see a modest benefit of maybe a couple of hundred dollars a year for, I believe it's around 8 or 9 years, but then a lot of the tax cuts expire, and starting in 2027, starting 10 years from now, many Georgians would actually see a tax increase, whereas the corporate tax cuts aimed at those at the very top would be permanent.
So one of the things that I'd like for you to help us understand, Wesley, is this. We know that basically we're having a revival of trickle-down economics. We know that that did not work the way we were told that it would work under former President Ronald Reagan. Well, I'm sorry. Actually, it did work the way he told us it would work. The people at the top would get the lion's share of the money. The folks immediately below them would get a pretty good share. And as the wealth worked its way down, it would slow down to a trickle so that those at the bottom would be left really just hoping to get a few crumbs. So it really worked the way President Reagan told us it would work. Somehow, it's still an appealing economic approach to a lot of people. Are there any instances in the past in history where we find that trickle-down economics really did help everyone, not just the rich, but all the way down the spectrum to the poor as well?
That's a really great question. And what I would say is there was more merit to that argument in the past when federal tax rates really were arguably perhaps too high than many would think. For example, in the 1960s, when President JFK cut taxes for the top tax rate was in the 90s. I believe it was in the high 70s when President Reagan cut the top rates back in the early 80s. Now, though, the top federal tax rates are not nearly as large. They're really historically low, and wealthy taxpayers and large corporations, large profitable corporations in the United States, really get a very good deal compared to both their counterparts in other similar countries, as well as their counterparts in the past. And so, whereas, you know, a few decades ago, there might have been some sort of pent-up economic potential at the very top that a kind of top-down approach like this could unleash, now it's really a misdiagnosis of the key challenges facing our communities and the key challenges facing our country. There's a lot of emerging evidence and research that points to what we really need is more of a bottom-up approach, or, if you will, a kind of middle-class out approach, where families are able to access more resources, more ladders of opportunity, both in terms of traditional things like good K-12 schools and a good college to go to, or, I say, a good job training program to get into, as well as just having more secure family finances, because when people have a few extra dollars in their pocket, they're able to spend those dollars at local shops and restaurants. They're able to invest in their family's future financial success. And those sorts of things keep people productive. They keep them on the job, working more hours, contributing to their companies and their communities. And so what we really need are strategies focused on how to help people thrive rather than how do we give a huge tax cut at the very top and hope some of those benefits trickle down to everybody else.
And one of the things that we're being told is that the reason for this tax cut proposal, this tax cut plan, is that as the corporations receive these huge tax cuts, they will in turn be able to make more money, which will in turn enable them to pay their employees more. Well, one of the things I've been wondering about as I listen to that is that we've been reading and hearing for several years now, a number of years, that our corporations are more productive than they've been in a long, long time, and that the cash that they're building up has been seeing some phenomenal heights, and yet part-time jobs, fewer benefits, lower pay. And so I'm just curious as to whether there's any reason for us to give any credence to what the tax proposers are saying with regards to if we can just cut the taxes, the companies will make more and they'll pay more.
Carl, I it's a great question, and I agree that if high profits, if historically high profits for large corporations meant that they were going to invest more in people, hire more folks, increase wages, then we would have seen that already over the past few years and the past couple of decades when an increasing share of the state's economic growth of all income generated in this country, including here in Georgia, goes to those at the very top and goes to corporations, you know, who are doing well and already getting a good deal. And so adding a little bit more on top, adding a cherry on top, if you will, with a big tax break sort of paid for by everyone else, there's really very little evidence from our history, evidence from experts and studies on this to suggest that that's going to have, other than maybe something very marginal around the edges, that it's going to have a large economic effect.
All right. So, Wesley, your closing thought.
Carl, the only other thing I'd like to make sure your listeners are alert to is that the tax plan that's going to be voted on in the Senate, likely next week, starting the week of the 27th, also includes a provision that eliminates the individual mandate under the federal health care law, under the Affordable Care Act, that helps make sure people are kind of getting into the marketplace, getting their health subsidies from the federal government, and able to afford coverage and go to a doctor. There are estimates that if that elimination of the mandate does pass Congress, then as many as 13 million more Americans will be uninsured within a few years because fewer people will be on the Affordable Care Act marketplaces or receiving coverage in that way.
So does that mean that we see a return to not only poor health amongst Americans, because since they won't have the ability to have the hospitals, emergency rooms, et cetera, compensated, they'll start back going when it's dire instead of early on for routine physicals, et cetera. Does that mean that we'll start seeing more emergency rooms beginning to provide uncompensated care again?
I believe that's correct. Fewer people with insurance means more people showing up at emergency rooms and other places of care without the ability to pay. At the end of the day, those costs have to be covered by someone, and if they're not covered through affordable health coverage, then they're covered by taxpayers, they're covered by communities in terms of other forms of where that money comes from.
Interesting. So we the taxpayers, we the people, will pay one way or the other. Either we'll help to pay and enable people to be covered through the individual mandate, or there will be no individual mandate, and we the taxpayers, we the people, will pay for those costs that are not being compensated at the hospital, at the emergency rooms, as well as the added cost of paying for more, even more intense care when the people show up on an emergent basis as opposed to just for a routine basis.
Right. And because, we wind up paying one way or another, that's why we like to talk about the importance of expanding coverage. Why don't we address this issue in a constructive way and allow people to have the ability to afford a visit to a doctor so that they can both keep themselves healthy but also productive, so that they can stay on the job and they can help their companies and communities.
So one last question with regards to the health care.
Yes, sir.
We can have the individual mandate and we the people pay for it that way, or no individual mandate and we go back to the way it was before. Do we have any evidence that indicates which cost is higher?
Well, what I would say is it really should not be viewed as a viable option to go back to the way things were before the Affordable Care Act, because that's when people could be denied coverage for any number of pre-existing conditions. People had a huge degree of difficulty accessing a doctor at an affordable price when they were sick. People were being bankrupt because of so much medical debt piling up. We should do everything we can to make sure that we don't return to those days. The mandate that everyone has to have health coverage may not be the most popular thing in the world, but it is really critical to making sure that the marketplace works for everyone. Because if you get everybody in, including healthy people and people who need a little bit more help, who may be sick, then that allows the cost to stay reasonable for everyone who's buying insurance.
And so it comes down to the fact that this is not just an economic issue, which it is, and a very important one, but it is also a moral and ethical matter.
Yes, it's all of those things. And on the economy piece is this discussion we're having around access to health care, around the taxes that we use to pay for that and other critical investments, the federal budget that sort of controls the purse strings for all of that. At the end of the day, these things may be a little bit complicated and may sound a little bit technical from time to time, but they really touch people's individual lives as well as the health of the overall economy in really critical ways.
Wesley, I appreciate you for helping us gain a much better understanding of these issues, and much continued success at what you all are doing there. Thank you for taking on that mission.
Carl, it's our pleasure, and we're always happy to call in and chat on whatever subject your listeners may want to hear about.
Appreciate you. We'll be in touch soon.
All right, take care.
All right. I'll be right back, everyone.